This episode of the Consulting Pipeline podcast is brought to you by me, Philip Morgan. If you would like some form of support with making that transition from generalist to specialist, and you are a self-employed software developer, I can help. I have some ways, some services that I provide to help, one of which is working with me one-on-one, and one is working on with me in a group setting called the Positioning Accelerator Program. To find out more about the Positioning Accelerator Program, head over to positioningacceleratorprogram.com. In today's interview, I speak with Adam of Tamar Labs, and Adam has what I think is a very interesting story about the transition from generalist to specialist. Adam currently is sort of specializing in a way that will over time develop a horizontal market position for his services, which are focused on server scaling and performance. And I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Adam, in which he describes how he arrived at that point and what it was like to be in the middle of and executing on that transition. All right, Adam, we are recording. So Adam, thanks for being here. I would love it if you could start by introducing yourself. Who are you and what do you do? What's like the 30-second version?
Right. Hi, Philip. Thank you for having me. I'm a part of a group called Tamar Lab. It's me and a couple of friends. And what we do is consult startups. We help startups scale their business, scale their technical stack, and basically outperform, solve performance problems of their system. Our motto is serve millions of clients faster, and that's exactly what we want to help our users achieve, to serve all their millions of clients way, way, way faster.
That's great. You're located in Israel, right? And is it Tel Aviv or where exactly?
Yeah. So Israel is a small place. We're in Tel Aviv.
Okay.
But I have clients in Beersheba and in Haifa, Netanya,
all over. Okay. Wonderful. So let's kind of roll the clock back about 3 years. How did you describe what you did when you first started working for yourself?
Right. We started a business. We started a business right after the army. We were friends from school, mm-hmm. and we kind of didn't know what we really wanted to do. We just knew we wanted to be self-employed. At least I knew that, and we said we'll start working on the field of cybersecurity, where all of us were out of the army on these kinds of missions, and. And with this knowledge, it was kind of a safe bet. Mm-hmm. That said, we would actually take any project that come along, and that's exactly what we did. So even though all three of us had this background in performance, we kind of defaulted to the hype of cybersecurity.
Aha. Okay. So how did you find clients at that time? You said you would take almost anything you could get. How did did clients find you, or did you go out and find them, or what did that look like?
Yeah, it was a bit of word of mouth. A lot of putting our names out there, just saying, yeah, we're looking for something to do. Actually, through a lot of job boards, we would just find someone who's looking for employees and say, okay, what if you'll do this project on the side and it because of the way you're working with these job boards, you really don't have a lot of choice. Uh-huh. Because you, even though that you are the one initiating the conversation, you still choose you still have a limited choice between these projects, between jobs that can be outsourced. Uh-huh. And then you're more of an you do more of an Upwork kind of work than actual consulting with a lot of value or partnership.
Right. Right. Got it. So were most of your clients local or remote or a mix of the both?
100% local. Okay. We tried branching out to other countries. We even had a project with, we tried having a project with the Albanian government. Uh-huh. Through a local connection, but it didn't came through again, because we didn't have anything special to bring to the table, we just say, okay, we can do this. But nothing came of it because we didn't have any advantage over the local manpower, which Albania is not a rich country. It's way cheaper to work, to take local employees.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. Somewhere along the line, something changed. So you started doing things differently. When did that happen?
Yeah. So 3 months into our run of the company, we started working with a client, mm-hmm. which I will not mention by name.
Good. Okay.
This, yeah. And the experience. Basically, we did every possible mistake in terms of how to run a project, how to manage it with a client. We kind of skipped the stage of redefining what success looks like. We didn't define what we are doing and what we are not doing. We didn't estimate the times needed correctly.
Uh-huh.
And we, like everything you can imagine. And since it was a project with the title of like security related, and we eventually, okay, we estimated this project for around 3 months of labor, and a year and 2 months after that, we were still working on it. So
the reason I laugh, Adam, is because I've done the exact same thing myself. I just know how painful that is.
Yeah. So it wasn't only painful for us. It was also painful for the client because he promised it to his clients down the road. And obviously, price kind of went up, but we settled on a fixed price to begin with. So all the cost bared on our business.
Yes.
Eventually what came of it is, both of my partners, the company kind of broke up.
Okay.
Both of my partners are today full-time employees in other companies. They're not self-employed anymore. We have some interaction still when I need something specific that they are, their expertise is needed. But
yes.
But basically the company is not what it used to be.
Yes.
And I kind of blame it on this project. Also, there was also some good of it. It came of it. Mm-hmm. At that point, once I was kind of alone, I could really take the company wherever I felt like, whatever project I felt like doing.
Yes.
And at that point, I was an avid listener to the Freelancers show, which I highly recommend.
Uh-huh.
And you attended, I think it was your first attendance on a podcast that
okay.
time, on that podcast at least.
Right.
And I kind of heard your show about, and you really captured the exact state of mind I was in. Like I was working with clients I didn't really like, but I didn't know why. I was working on projects I didn't really like, but I didn't know why.
Right.
And all these problems really hit home. It was okay. So what are you saying? And you kind of you said in a very deterministic way that positioning can be a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily enough, I have a lot of experience in this in a specific field, which I gathered because I liked doing projects in this field. And as the years progressed, I did more and more projects. Some of them pro bono, some of them open source, some of them just for fun, mm-hmm. and some of them for pay.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them I had a great time doing, and all of them I liked the guys I was working with, the guys and girls I was working with. So for me, positioning was a no-brainer. It's like, right, okay, I know who are my clients. I know who are... what kind of projects I want. I know I can prove expertise. So even in the imposter syndrome wasn't as dramatic. Choosing the right positioning for my business was the act of the choice was very, very simple for me.
Okay.
But then going through with it and changing the website and start talking to clients about, okay, this is what I'm doing now, and saying no to projects. Like when you have no projects and a project comes in through the door and it's not what you want to do, it's really tempting to take it, even though it's totally wrong for your business.
Right.
And so that took some courage.
Yes.
And so basically that was it. So 18 months into the business, 18 months ago as well. So we were right in the, I was right in the middle of doing this change, and I just decided that I can do that. It was more of a mental decision. It was more of a mental thing than an operational issue in the business. Because the business is, as I said, you go from project to project. You the way the business worked back then is I didn't have several projects on this in parallel. We just did whatever we do, and then we moved to the next thing.
Okay.
And ever since then, basically that's it.
Okay, so let me ask you a few questions to get more detail about that trend. That transition is the first thing I'm interested in. Yeah. So you had some, it sounds like, now you talk about yourself as a scale and performance expert, right?
Right.
And you had some experience doing that. Is that right? Like you had done a few projects where that was the focus of the work?
Yeah. So I've done some of them. Most of my work in this field was academic. I was lucky enough to, during my bachelor's degree, to work in a lab, and in Mozick's lab in the Hebrew University. Mm-hmm. And apart from being a very forming experience for me, I also gained this tool of, so to speak, performance hacking, mm-hmm. which is in need right now in the industry.
Right. Okay.
So I had some experience with that, but taking this 5 or 6 years old, like this product from 6 years ago and say, okay, this is what I'm doing, was not as simple as it seems in terms of clientele, because when you say I'm an expert on X, the next thing is, okay, prove it.
that's a great point. So what do you do when that happens? You know, if you say that to a client and they're like, okay, prove it. And I know I have some Israeli friends. Like, your Israelis tend to be pretty direct when they say something like that. So what do you say? What happens next when that happens?
So what I realized is that is the better, the, sorry, as far as my experience has taken me, is to see basically the best technique is diversion. Like if they say prove it, I'll say, okay, show me your problem, I'll prove it with your problem. And then we move from let's talk vaguely about me to let's talk in specific terms about you, about your problem.
That's incredible. I want to stop you. I'm sorry for interrupting, Adam, but the way that you make it about your client is perfect. It's just, that's great. Okay, please continue.
Yeah. So once the issue is the client and their problem, there's a saying in Hebrew, I'll translate it very loosely, is, whether it's true or false, say it with confidence.
Right.
So even if you're unsure, say it with confidence, and then say you're unsure. It's fine.
Yeah.
But when speaking to someone, it's whether it's on a stage in front of 100 people or whether it's in a room with just another person, mm-hmm. You're putting up a show, and this show should be not only entertaining but also enriching for the other side, for who is ever watching. And if this person is taking even the small things that enriches their lives or their business or whatever, it's you're done your job. And if that's what they'll remember, that okay, I've been in this room with this person, or I've been on this Skype call with this person, and even if we didn't find a match eventually, it was cool and I learned something, or I got a new idea, even if it's not directly for me, but something I said or something I said, I told him to test. That's fine, because 2 years down the line, or 3 years down the line, this might come back. And I've seen that, because during this huge project we did that basically broke up the company, mm-hmm. I've been to a convention and met a friend from the university. And he was a CTO of a small startup, and he kind of told me about in general what he's doing right now and where the company is going. And I kind of, you know, we're sitting in a convention hall waiting for a talk to start. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, yeah, it's kind of cool, but you might need to think about this and that, because if you won't do that in 12 months time, you'll have a problem. And that was our interaction. And 12 months later, he gave me a call.
Right on schedule.
Yeah, right on schedule. It was awesome, because he's an extremely talented person, and I enjoyed working with him so much back in university and again lately. Mm-hmm. And he totally could solve this problem by himself, but the risk just wasn't worth it. Like mm-hmm. he knows me, he can give me a call. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, that's a good point. So the way that you have specialized is a horizontal specialization. Like there's a lot of different types of companies in different verticals that could use somebody like you. And you've pointed out that sometimes the lead time on developing new business is lengthy, right? A year or more. So how are you finding clients around this specialization now?
Right. So I'm very lucky to have a wonderful startup ecosystem in Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. But this ecosystem is kind of sparse. People are not really people will meet each other only if they have a direct need. It's part of this Israeli mentality. You'll meet someone and tell them about your startup only if you really need something you think you'll get something out of it.
Okay.
Part of it is a lot of idea theft, because everyone mm-hmm. has some form of startup, so people are really afraid that someone will steal their idea. Mm-hmm. I'll think, and excuse me, friend, this is totally BS. Everyone has a great idea all the time. No one is doing anything about it, let alone doing something with someone else's idea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but that's my perspective on the subject.
Sure.
But still, people, especially when they're CDOs of major or of up and coming startups, which is the kind that needs my services. Mm-hmm. They'll meet very rarely with other people, so or other startup CDOs, for many reasons, and that means that I need to be in the back of their head, way 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 before they get to the point that they might figure out that they may have a problem. Like this is, right. I need to be there so early. So talking in meetups. Giving pro bono meetings with to startups, pro bono meetings to startups which are in very very early stages before they even have their first technical person. Mm-hmm. I even got to a point that I went with an entrepreneur to an investor as the technical side of the business. Like he's a technical guy. He'll explain.
And so, you're doing that kind of stuff for free, essentially, right? Like,
yes, yeah. Most of it is for free. Mm-hmm. I'm actually writing a book right now. It should be probably once when your audience will hear it, it will already be out.
Nice.
It's called the Scale, the Performance Scale Troubleshooting Handbook. You'll recognize the title. It's highly influenced by other books I've read.
Uh-huh. Nice.
At least, yeah. And basically, the way I'm more interested in this, in solving interesting problems for exciting startups,
mm-hmm.
than having that ultimate business with hundreds of workers.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized 2 days ago that half a block from me, I have. It's hard to call them a competitor. They're a huge company. Like, and they're a dev shop of 20 people,
uh-huh.
And what they do is consulting for cloud for startups and basically, if you have problems with your cloud, everything below that. So they do everything I do and more. But I don't like when I spoke with their CEO, I didn't feel we have anything in common. Their entire business model is so different.
Right.
Sorry. So I'm really, once you have your couple of big clients that kind of pay your rent and mm-hmm. get you to work and back,
mm-hmm.
And you get them on retainer because this is how giant clients like to work for some reason.
Yeah.
It really enables you to be free with working with startups. So
yeah,
as a vertical, startups are tough. And even though even in Tel Aviv, which is hands down, it's hands down the best. You might say Silicon Valley is better, but sure, I'm Israeli. For me, Israel is where I feel, it's my home.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of really impressive software companies that operate out of Israel.
Yeah, precisely. And yet, even though it's such a hotbed for startups, providing services to startups in Israel is really tough.
It's tough. It's tough everywhere. it's attractive, but it's tough everywhere for the same reasons. It's hard to find these. Like you mentioned something very important. A lot of times, you're finding these companies a year or more before they need you, and not many people have the ability to do that if they're not local to the startup. It's difficult. So that's actually an advantage for you, your proximity to them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of an unfair advantage because when I read or hear about a consultant that might help my business, or it's always like, okay, it's somewhere in the States or it's somewhere, I don't know where, somewhere in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never relevant. I don't feel like I'll just give him a call and see if it's relevant.
Right.
And in Israel, this concept, at least as far as I found out, this concept of I'll just give him a call and see if it's relevant is so powerful.
Mm.
And this is why my call to action on my site is not download this ebook, is let's set up a 15-minute call. Let's just mm-hmm. see if it's relevant. Skype lets you do that now.
Yeah. So on that note, Adam, if people want to go to your website and sort of get a sense of what that looks like now, where would they go to see your website?
Right. So our website is tamarlabs.com.
Let's spell that out.
Yeah, I'll spell it out. It's T-A-M-A-R L-A-B-S. So okay. Tamar, yeah, Tamar is a bit of a, it's a word in Hebrew. It means date. And labs is like labs in English.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's .com.
I'm looking at it right now. I love it. People need to go see this because of how simple it is and how there's so little, there's no irrelevant information there at all. I love it. Sorry to interrupt, Adam, but I just wanted to say that.
Oh, I actually wanted to say something else. It's kind of off topic, but
go for it.
We start. Yeah. At some point I started trying to find the right vertical for me. to be more like better positions than just startups, because startups is a huge, it's a huge field.
Sure.
And I found, and I decided I'll go with geospatial startups, like startups that use specifically geospatial data. And in Israel, you can, off the top of your mind, what it means? It means Uber. It means Get Taxi, which is in Israel. It means Waze, that is from Israel. These are big companies, but you have also small companies like Vuser and the many others. And I even found a convention in Switzerland, and I gave a talk there. But I found it to be an overposition. The market was just too small.
Right.
Because whenever you define yourself as a geospatial startup, you'll already have people who have a lot of experience in geospatial systems, and they will rarely enable someone else, someone from the outside, to come and tell them what to do. It's an ego thing.
And for me
that was an overpositioning. So I took a step back and took a bit of a broader approach, and that this seems to work out just fine. It still kind of is seeming to work out just fine. I'm just starting to get to enjoy the fruits of this this new position.
That's great. Yeah. And before we hit the record button, you mentioned that it's been about 18 months. The process that you've described has been about 18 months long so far.
Yeah, so far about 18 months, and as you can hear, it was a lot of experiment. It took a lot of experimentation to find the right thing. And you know, you have all these wonderful companies here in Israel. You have Taboola and Outbrain, who are doing amazing things with streaming data, and you have as I said, Waze, which is now Google, but still, and mm-hmm. Get Taxi, which had some problems with performance, and they fixed them in their own way. I actually almost caught them on time, but they only had someone to do that for them.
Right.
So if I were to position myself in this field, say 6 months ago, 6 months earlier, maybe, you know, you can never tell.
Yeah, sure.
But and all these companies are doing these really inspiring things, and positioning myself in this vertical of working with startups is kind of a ticket to step in the door. Kind of a ticket for you to step in the door and say, "Okay, I'm here for you. Tell me a bit more about your project."
Right. Yeah, it sounds to me like you're saying, you don't know exactly what it looks like at first. Like your interest in this world drew you in, and you had to spend some time there and have conversations before you really had any clarity about what it was actually going to be like. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about it. And a lot of the time you get to a meeting room, and the person in front of you will start talking and telling you about his problem or about his. It will usually start, he or she will start telling you about their successes before they will tell you about any problems they might have. Yeah. You kind of have to milk them for it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you really understand that there is zero match, and you kind of wasted this person's time. And it's, and when you're in this process of positioning, it's really tempting to say, no, I can solve this problem as well. But you have to hold yourself. Like, okay, I can, but is it right for me and the client, actually, for me to come and just solve it for him?
Right. Yeah.
And this is kind of an emergent notion of what your business is.
Yes. So Adam, you mentioned you had a few questions. Do you think now would be a good time to dive into those?
Right. Yeah. So I know there's actually, I have only one question. This vertical I chose of working with startups. I said it's hard, but it's actually notoriously hard. People are not only having trouble connecting with startups, but having trouble billing startups, basically.
Right.
Because either the client is unable to pay or not willing because they have some issues with their investor, or as a technical person, because you are bringing in a technical person to your startup, which might not be there in a month or so.
Right.
It's more of that. It's not that I might not be there. That's the whole idea, that you just bring me in and then I go away.
Right.
And I have all these problems around working with startups. And I was really wondering whether startups are actually a vertical, because I kind of feel it's okay. It's just a type of business, but it might not be a vertical per se.
Yeah.
And
so in the most strict definition of what a vertical is, I would say startups are not a vertical. They're a segment within many verticals. So they are new companies within, you know, software, within biotechnology, within manufacturing, within, you know, on and on. So startups exist. They're more of a sort of segment or a type of company that can exist in any vertical. So as a group, they're not really a vertical. I would maybe define them more as an audience, in that they have shared needs and desires that that bond them together. That's different than a vertical, but still, they are a somewhat cohesive group. They tend to listen to the same people. They tend to pay attention to, you know, the things like lean startup methodology, and so they're all going to think, who is it, Steve Blank, who wrote that? You know, they all think he's a rock star. No, I mean, not every single startup, but I'm generalizing, right? So they're more like an audience than anything else. And they are kind of, they are like an audience. They're like fans of a sports team because they share a lot of things in common, even though they may be, you know, you may have a startup that's trying to focus on the automotive industry and a different startup that's focusing on cancer treatments, you know, so they may have nothing else in common, but they have a lot of beliefs and preferences in common. So that's the simple answer. I would call them an audience rather than a vertical.
Right. Yeah. So, and that leads me to the core of the question. So would you actually suggest positioning yourself, and not only a manner of I'm doing X for vertical, but I'm doing X for vertical / audience. Is it still a valid position?
I mean, your expertise of scale and performance is just truly horizontal expertise. There's almost no vertical where there's not probably a few companies that could benefit from what you do. And in fact, the problems that you solve for startups, those same problems may exist within more mature, larger, stable companies, right? Like, and in fact, I've seen in some large companies, they're desperate to function like startups, because part of what keeps their leadership up at night is a fear that some startup is going to come along and eat their lunch, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to throw this out there, Adam, that what you sell to startups may also be actually equally or more valuable to bigger companies.
Yeah.
So at some point, maybe you will start to focus your marketing on those bigger companies.
Yeah, right. So I totally agree. And actually, I kind of mentioned that before. The way what enables me to do all this free work, which is basically 70% of my time is free work. I'm doing stuff for free for clients. I'm giving information for for nothing or almost nothing. Right. What enabled me doing that is working for a big company. Right. And I have a project, a return project with a big company. I had another one before another big company. And but the problem with these huge companies, you usually have this marketing to big companies is first of all very, very different than marketing to startups.
Yes.
Working with them is extremely different.
That's right.
And not only that, but what you can do within these companies, even if they are willing to do this, as you said, willing to work like a startup, is usually so different because it's such a huge mechanism. Some companies, like if you think about these huge corporations, like Google is not a good example, but Microsoft or Cisco or I don't know, here in Israel, Elbit is a big company. These are basically huge meat grinders. People are coming in and out all the time. Mm-hmm. And being consulted with these kind of people, you have to have at least a bit of gray hair. Luckily or unluckily, I'm still not there. I'm young and looking young.
Yeah, enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. So it's also a matter of appearance.
Yes,
and
sure.
Yeah, it's always in the back of my mind, but stepping in the door in these huge companies is.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a totally different kind of sport.
I think maybe one of the things you were asking in your question was, should you further narrow or like change how you define what you do? So instead of saying scale and performance consultant or expert, maybe you start saying I'm a scale and performance expert for, and then you're trying to define the type of company that you work with. And I'm not entirely sure, Adam. On the one hand, I don't think there's any company that's your value proposition is only relevant primarily to software companies, right? Companies where the software is the product.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's some kind of critical internal application.
Yes. Some of it is IoT, but yeah, that's as far as IoT is where basically the hardware most resembles software. So yeah, it's a software thing.
So in a way there's an implied focus there. And it may not be necessary to state it in how you describe what you do, because it's just not relevant to people, to companies that are not primarily software companies.
Right.
So it may not be necessary to be more specific. The times when it is helpful to be more specific is when it helps somebody say, oh, I know who I should introduce you to. I know somebody who works at that type of company. Or when it makes your value proposition seem more credible, because no one could be an expert in, let's say that you're an accountant, right? There's so much variation within the world of accounting. There's accountants who focus on tax law and others, I'm sure, who focus on investments.
Yeah, you used to give the example of a website builder for dentists.
Right, exactly. Adding that extra specificity by saying who you focus on makes it obvious that you're an expert. But I think that the thing you're focused on, scale and performance, is the domain only of experts. Like only people who are actually experts are going to go around saying, I can solve difficult scale and performance problems. Twitter should have had me on their hotline when they were having scaling problems. Like making that claim is a rather bold claim. And so it's people who are not actually experts or aren't confident in their expertise are not going to go around making that claim. So what I'm saying, Adam, is I think you have self-selected into a fairly elite group in just claiming that you have this expertise. And when I say claiming, I don't distrust that you have the expertise. I just mean you're saying it about yourself, right? And so I'm not sure there's a real reason for you to be more specific at this point.
Right. Thanks. It is what I was asking. And it's kind of already validated itself as you heard about the geo special stuff, but
yes,
sure. And it's thank you for answering. This is further validating what I, as I said, what the experimenting with this notion showed.
Wonderful. Well, Adam, thank you for being on the podcast to talk about this process. I am probably going to circle back in maybe another 6 months or so and check in and see how it's going, because I'm very interested in, if you're willing to continue to share how the journey is, I'm very interested in helping listeners of the podcast see how this unfolds in real life. So I hope we can do that. And thank you again. Can you just remind listeners one more time where they can check you out online?
Right. So as I said, I'm solving performance and scale problems for tech startups. You can find me on tamarlabs.com. That's TAMARLABS.com. I can work everywhere in the world. I actually find myself flying all around for clients. Book me, call me.
Great. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you very much for having me.